Psalm 23, if you could turn back there in your Bibles, is where we'll be this morning for the preaching. And this is a very familiar passage to most of us. And I'd say if there was one passage of the Old Testament that most people in the country or maybe even the world would know about, it would probably be Psalm 23, Christians and non-Christians alike. And there's a danger in that we can become so familiar with a passage like that, that it begins to lose its significance in our minds. But there's a reason why a passage like this has been so beloved by many throughout the centuries, even the millennia. It's because the words of comfort that God has for us here apply not only to narrow situations, but really to all aspects of our lives. That's what we'll be taking a look at. Beginning there in verse 1 of Psalm 23, David, as we read, is the author of this psalm. David, who was a shepherd, David says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." The metaphor used throughout the first part of the psalm, and actually metaphors are an important part of the psalm. If you're going to come to the psalm, and many psalms in fact, you have to come with an understanding of metaphor. This idea that God is describing himself and God is being described not by a simile, not by saying God is like this or he is as this or he's kind of similar to this. The idea of a metaphor is the idea of an equation. That David is saying, he's saying, God is my shepherd. The shepherds were a common image, common occupation. Not many of us own sheep here in this congregation, and that's probably a good thing because my experiences with sheep have not been all that pleasant. Sheep are, as most of us could probably surmise from things we've read or heard from others, pretty stupid, smelly, dirty. My wife and I were able to take care of some sheep when we were staying house-sitting at a house in Ipswich, Massachusetts several times back in the early 2000s, and we had to feed these sheep. And the sheep would run away from the food, they'd run away from the fence, you know, get through the fence, they'd just do all sorts of strange things. But the metaphor being developed here is that God is our shepherd, we are the sheep. And the shepherding metaphor, just like the sheep metaphor, is a metaphor of strength. The shepherding metaphor is a metaphor of a protector, a guide. A shepherd in the ancient Near East, even as we read about in John chapter 10, was supposed to take care of the sheep. And you'd get people who were hired hands, people who were not committed to the sheep, people who didn't have an interest in the sheep. And when the wolf came, hey, the wolf had a dinner, because they weren't interested in protecting the sheep. But the shepherd's job was to protect the sheep, to care for them, to feed them, to guide them. David is saying, this is how we can think about God. If we're the sheep, and he's the shepherd, and we are needy sheep, David is explaining here. He says, "The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want." I don't know about you, but many times I've read through the psalm in the past and have thought, well, it's a command here. It's a command, this idea that God is commanding us not to desire anything. We shouldn't want stuff. You know, God's our shepherd. We shouldn't look at long after things. But actually, it's just an old English way here of expressing this idea that we will not be wanting. That we are needy people. Just thinking about all the things I need to live. Just down to the basics of air or food or water or relationships or work. These things that we need, what David is saying is he's saying, because God is my shepherd, I shall not be wanting. I shall not be needy. I won't need anything. And he's my shepherd, David is saying, because he's saying he's not just a God out there, not just a shepherd out there of some people. He is my shepherd. I am affiliated with him. He is my God. He is the one who's protecting me. Because God is our shepherd, we will not be lacking. We will not be needy. One of the reasons that this psalm is so comforting to us, one of the reasons that God is our comfort is because he provides what we need. Move on down to verses 2 and 3. The metaphor continues. He makes me lie down in green pastures. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. Not only are we needy, we're tired. And the sheep's job was to follow the shepherd around to different parts and find grass. The shepherd would take them to different patches of grass, and sometimes that involved long walks for the sheep. They'd get tired. Grass in the ancient Near East, especially even in the modern day Near East, is not that plentiful. It's a dry climate. And grass has to be sought after. Well, this shepherd that David is speaking about, it says he makes us lie down in places that are green or leads us beside still waters, probably better translated restful waters. There's this picture of a nice green lush grass next to the flowing stream, and you get to lay down there because sheep don't just lie down, you know, unless they feel safe. Sheep are always a little skittish, always looking about, you know, what's that guy doing over there, and ready to run away. But when they feel safe, they lie down. They rest. And as he says there in verse 3, he restores my soul. Not just referring to the non-physical aspect of our beings, but the word for soul can be translated life or self or all of us. The God takes the sheep, we who are weary and tired, and he gives us rest. He restores our whole beings. The metaphor then continues on in the second part of verse 3. He leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. So we've seen that he provides what we need. He gives us rest when we're weary. But it says he gives us direction when we're lost. Sheep, as I mentioned before, get lost. That's the reason why Jesus talks about going, a good shepherd going after the wandering lost sheep and bringing that sheep home, because a sheep left to themselves has no internal guidance system. They're not going to go back to the right place. I was thinking about my own life and our lives and the lives of just human beings in general and thinking how quickly we get lost. Not only literally, but metaphorically, this idea that we think this is a good path, right? We think this is a good way to go. I'm going to go this way. It's totally not where God has commanded us to go. It says he leads me in paths of righteousness for his name's sake. These are the right paths, basically. He gives me the right road to take. And it's a delight. It's not a burden. It's not like, oh, I have to follow God's ways. It's a delight, and he does it for his name's sake. Because as we're reminded throughout Scripture, God is always working for two things, his glory and our good. God is working for his name. He would show to the world and to us that he is as great as he has said he is. He's proving that in our lives. And he's giving us goodness, pouring out goodness upon us. And he's giving us direction. He's leading us in paths of righteousness. So he leads us and directs us when we're lost. And then moving down to verse 4, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, fear no evil. This idea of the valley of the shadow of death is this imagery that's been used by many throughout history. It's something that most of us can identify with. And I think the better way to translate it, maybe, you know, this Psalm 23 is really has an English translation tradition behind it. And this is one of these ways it shows up, that a better way to translate this might be just like a really dark valley. Maybe like a deathly dark valley. Because in the ancient Near East, the sheep had to wander into canyons every once in a while. Because often canyons were where the water was. The water seeks the lowest place, and in a dry, arid region in the ancient Near East, the water is going to be found down in the canyons. And the canyons were green and lush because the water was there, so there was food, but that's also where the predators like to hang out. So the little sheep wandering down into the dark canyon have the predator there waiting to grab the unsuspecting sheep. And so there are things to fear in the dark canyon. I think the reason this psalm is so comforting to us is because all of us have been through these dark canyons. Maybe it's a literally dark canyon. When my wife and I were first married, we were living in the city of Chicago, and we were in a pretty rough neighborhood because that's all we could afford, and there were all sorts of things that happened right outside of our door. We were thinking we were going to be the next victims of the crime that was happening all around us, and so we said, let's get out of the city for a little bit, and let's go camping up in the north woods of Wisconsin. So we got as far away as we could, we went camping, we did this hike-in camping place, all the stuff on our backs, got to the place in the middle of the woods, set up the tent. It's getting a little dark, and we hear this loud crunching noise. It sounded like something huge just jumped out of the tree. Now we're thinking someone came from Chicago to come kill us up in the woods. They followed us. So I'm thinking about that and laying in the tent, and there's a thunderstorm that comes. Now, I was a Boy Scout, and as a Boy Scout, one of the things I was taught is that when you put your tent out in the middle of the woods, you have to look for some dead trees, because you don't want to put your tent right under a dead tree, because when the thunderstorm comes, that tree's going to fall on you maybe and kill you. So I'm laying in the tent, the thunderstorm's come, I've heard the noise, and I'm realizing I didn't check for dead trees, and realizing I was going to be not only attacked by predator out in the woods, but a tree's gonna land on me. And Kendra, who can sleep through anything, was suddenly sleeping right next to me. That's kind of silly, but it's a picture of that fearful situation that I've encountered in my life, and I'm sure many of us have as well, where things are dark, there are fears, there are things to be scared of, there are possibilities that we imagine. And as we walk through those dark valleys in our lives, all we can think about is everything horrible that's going to happen or that has happened. The comfort to us in this psalm is that as the sheep, as we are in that deathly dark valley, we don't have to fear evil. It says, I will fear no evil. That evil's out there. It's around me. It could potentially happen, but I don't have to be afraid of it. Why? Because you are with me. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. That promise repeated almost more often than anything else in Scripture is, do not fear, for I am with you. It's just given over and over and over in the Bible. God's presence is the reason why we don't have to fear. And His presence is not just this warm, fuzzy feeling. It's a presence that's shown by evidence. He says, your rod and your staff, they comfort me. The rod was the shepherd's, weapon. That's what he whacked things with. He might whack an olive tree to knock down the olives for the sheep, but he might whack a predator to keep the wolves away as well. And he might whack a sheep misbehaving at the same time. But the staff is the shepherd's stick of comfort to guide the sheep, to direct the sheep, to lean on. And it's these evidences that the sheep see, that the shepherd is working in the sheep's life. The sheep know, that shepherd's here with me. We see God working in our life. We see His evidences around us. And we know He is with us. And so we don't have to live in deathly fear in the dark places of our lives. Moving down then into verse 5, we shift metaphors a bit. So this is debatable among people. Some have said the shepherding metaphor continues all the way throughout the psalm. I think the metaphor actually shifts from God as a shepherd in verses 1 through 4 to God as a host in verse 7. Someone who hosts you at a meal. It says, you prepare a table before me in the presence of my enemies. You anoint my head with oil. My cup overflows. See, a host in the ancient Near East, if someone had you over to dinner and they were a wealthy person, maybe even a king, they might pour perfumed oil on your head. They might anoint your head with oil as a symbol of honor, as a way of saying, you are a very important guest. They'd fill your cup of wine up and it would be full. You'd have everything that you need. And it says that God is this host who is preparing a meal for us. Interestingly enough, in the presence of our enemies. So I kind of pictured, you're there, you're surrounded by all these enemies, and God's saying, let's have a meal together. And the enemies are out there, they're cringing, they're looking on, they're saying, hey, come on, I'm going to get at him. But God is saying, you're here at a meal with me. Don't worry about those guys out there. And see, we all have enemies. Sheep have enemies. We have enemies. We all have people in our lives that it seems like they just want our destruction. They want to hurt us. They've done things to us. We're afraid of them for many reasons. And what God says is that He is like a generous, gracious host spreading a lavish meal before us. I don't know if you've had that experience, but I can think back to those times where people have had us over. They create this lavish meal for you. You don't have to worry about a thing. My grandma Dabowski, when I was in college, I went off to Chicago for college. It's not where I wasn't from Chicago originally, and she lived in Chicago, and so she'd have me, and she said, invite anyone you want over from college over. And so there'd be a group of guys, college guys, really hungry, coming on over on Sunday afternoons, because the school cafeteria didn't serve dinner on Sunday evenings, so it was either microwave popcorn or my grandma's dinner. And so we'd go over to my grandma's house, and she loved to be Martha Stewart kind of thing. Of just like she'd have the table of appetizers, and she'd have the cheese and the crackers and the shrimp and the cocktail sauce. And she, do you want a ginger ale or a root beer? Or do you want a Coke? Or what would you like? And she'd give it to you. All you had to do was just sit there, and she'd provide. And then she'd have this meal prepared. It's just like a Thanksgiving meal every time we went over there. The potatoes and the roast and the vegetables and the bread, and then just desserts all over the place for dinner. And she'd clean up, she'd take care of everything. And it's this picture that I get. When I think about God being our host, this is the picture I get of God saying, don't you worry about anything. Don't you worry about those enemies out there. I've got a meal prepared for you. I want to take care of you. I want to provide for you richly. And he says in verse 6, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life, and I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. See, this meal's not a one-time thing. God's not saying, hey, I'm going to give you a meal one time and then you kind of out on your own. He's saying, look, I want you to stay with me in my house. I don't want you just to come over for dinner. I want you to stay, be my guest in my house. And what David is saying is that this goodness and this mercy, or better translated, loving kindness or God's covenant love, they're going to be following me all the days of my life. I find that interesting that when we think about being in God's presence, we can be, very grateful and say, God, thank you. And we can begin to think, God, thank you that I've been so obedient to follow you and find you. But God has been the one bringing us in, chasing us home, in fact, because what's saying here is God's attributes, or God himself, God's being personified by his attributes here. God is actually chasing us home. That word that's translated in the ESV, follow, is better translated. It's a stronger word than follow. It's like pursue or chase. It's kind of like when that dog is chasing you. I've had several dogs chase me when I'm running. They don't want to get away. They don't want to go away. I had to kick a dog in the face in Pennsylvania because it was chasing me. They're after you. They don't want to let go. They see a runner, they're going. The idea there is that God has that same intensity after us. He's saying, you're not getting away. I'm pursuing you. And the intention of my pursuit is not to take a chunk out of your leg. It's to bring you home. It's to invite you back to my house so I can take care of you. Because though you may not want to be around me, I want you. And I want to be your loving host. And the idea behind all this is that I shall dwell in the house of the Lord forever. Maybe immediately David's talking about the temple. But most likely he's talking about the new heavens and the new earth. Heaven itself, where David will live in the presence of God forever. And he's saying that God is going to be this gracious host to me for the rest of eternity. I'll be living in his house. And homesick sheep that wander away, or people that are longing for a home, pilgrims and strangers on this earth that we are. Doesn't the idea of going home sound really good? It does to me. Going home to someone who's going to take care of you. That's what God is giving to us here in this psalm. He's saying, you're going to dwell in my house forever. Though things change, though death approaches, you will live in my presence forever. And as we looked at in John chapter 10, cannot we see these things in Jesus Christ, who is our shepherd, and he's our host. As we celebrate the Lord's Supper together, it's the Lord's Supper because it's Jesus' supper. He's inviting us to a meal that's a foretaste of the meal to come with him in heaven forever. Now, two more things I want to address after having worked through the psalm. Two things I want to address with you here is one, is this psalm really believable? I mean, does this psalm, do all these promises of God as our shepherd, as God as our host, does this even fit with what we experience in our lives? Because life doesn't seem like we're always lying down in green pastures or beside still waters, or that there's nothing to fear, that everything's always just kind and good around us. Sometimes it feels like God's left us alone. How do we reconcile this psalm with all the things that we see around us and experience in our lives? A couple of points here. Certainly can't address it at length, but one of the points is that this psalm is true. David is not writing this psalm in ignorance. He's not writing this psalm because he hasn't experienced difficult things in life. David is the same one who wrote many of the other psalms that deal with enemies, that deal with feeling abandoned, that deal with wondering where God is. And David can write this psalm at the same time as he writes other things where he's saying, God, where are you? You sure seem far away. Have you abandoned me? Have you forgotten about me? Because God's care for us is true in the midst of our suffering. Not in spite of our suffering, but in the midst of it. He is our shepherd and he is our host. And we're reminded that all the psalms are in the context of Psalm chapter 1. And Psalm chapter 1 is the prologue to the book of Psalms, where The one, there's two ways to live, basically, as God lays out in Psalm chapter 1. It's the man who walks in the counsel of the wicked, or it's the man who delights in the law of the Lord. And these promises of Psalm 23 are the promises for the one who delights in the law of the Lord, the one who is the child of God, the one who walks in God's ways, the one who trusts in God as his or her shepherd. And the other thing we need to remember from the bigger context of the Bible is that as we follow our shepherd is going to actually lead us into suffering. Romans 8:17 says that if we're going to share with him in his glory, we first have to share with him in his sufferings. And Jesus said, you don't need to be afraid of people, because if they did this to me, they're going to do it to you too. So interestingly enough, our shepherd who leads us into green pastures and beside still waters and in his paths, and we don't have to fear this dark, deathly dark valley, is going to lead us into suffering, which are for the good designs and purposes of the shepherd. In his wisdom and his knowledge, he knows all of this. But this psalm is true in the midst of our suffering as Christians. Second thing I'd like to think about as an application of the psalm is really how might this show up in our lives? What might this look like? How does God want us to live out this psalm, the truths of this psalm? And what we need to recognize from the psalm is that there really are no commands in here. God doesn't tell us to do anything in the psalm. Just look at the verses. He's not commanding us to do anything. All that's being told us in the psalm is, here's who I am. Here's how I'm providing for you. Here's how I'm shepherding you. Here's how I'm a host to you. But what I think God is getting across to us and how we might live this out is this idea of confidence in him. We're so convinced of his care for us as a shepherd and as a host that we can live in confidence before him, in faith, in trust. But I think I'd like us to think about that word confidence. We went to the Deerfield Fair, it was just a couple of weeks ago, right? And the Flying Wallendas are at the Deerfield Fair. I don't know if you've seen them before, up on the high wire and crazy, right? If I got up there, there's no way I'd survive. They're up on the high wire, they've got their long poles, and they'll do things like stack themselves up, they'll sit on chairs, ride bikes, have, you know, three layers of people up on that wire. And we're thinking the whole time, like, how are they doing that? And what if they fall? And that looks a little scary. But one of the Wallendas is this young man who just, he looks like he's having the time of his life up there. He is smiling and just kind of dancing around a little bit. And the one word that comes to my mind when I looked at him was confidence. He's in a perilous situation, but he's confident in his own abilities, really, his own training. And that's an aspect of confidence, and that's sometimes where our mind goes when we think about confidence, is I just need to, you know, just suck it up and be tough. But that's not the confidence that we look at and see in Psalm 23. The confidence we see in Psalm 23 is not a confidence in ourselves, but it's a confidence in God as a shepherd, as a host, as one who cares for us. I think of the missionary Jim Elliott. When I went to Wheaton College, Jim Elliott was a past graduate many decades ago now. Through the Gates of Splendor is the book that was written about him. And this idea that he was so confident in his God and the message of this good news of Jesus Christ that he would go into Ecuador jungles with his friends, and they'd stand on this beach on a river knowing they're in a very dangerous situation, and this tribe that was very hostile to their intentions came and killed them all and slaughtered them all on the beach. And they knew that was probably going to happen to them. But they did it with an unshakable confidence in God as a shepherd and a host. And now I know most days living that kind of confidence doesn't mean going into a similar situation where Jim Elliott and his friends went. Sometimes it just looks a little different. I wrote down just a few situations, what it might look like. One is that dealing with when we feel helpless or hopeless. You know, these are just helpless and hopeless feelings, things that we feel at times in our lives. You know, what kind of hope do I have? How in the world is this going to work out? And helplessness and hopelessness are not the final words and the only options for a Christian. We may be tempted by these. But if we have a shepherd and a host who cares for us, we don't have to stay there. I think of the idea of This autonomy that we seek after, or control that we, you know, if I can just control my world enough, if I can just master it, if I can just try harder, if I can rely only upon myself, which is where we end up when we've been hurt, better not trust anyone else. Better only trust myself. That's not where a Christian needs to be. A Christian can say, in myself, I am weak. I am needy. But I have a shepherd and a host who cares for me. There's a confidence that can come in the midst of fear. In the midst of fear that can seem crippling, that can seem disabling, that can, because we're thinking about all these future possibilities that we can't control. We do not have to fear because He is with me. And I think sometimes we return to these ideas of habitual sin, that we have sins that we go to because they provide comfort for us, because they're where we go when we're feeling bad. God says we don't have to actually live that way. We have been freed to follow Him in obedience in His paths of righteousness, in His right paths, because He's our shepherd and our host. This confidence, I like how John Calvin wrote it. He says, there is a great difference between the sleep of stupidity and the repose which faith produces. Repose meaning rest. That, you know, some of us are just ignorant and don't realize all the bad things that could happen to us in life. But faith is not like that. It's not ignorance. It's fully being aware of everything that's out there and saying, I will be trusting in my shepherd and my host. And I also like this quote from A.W. Tozer. He said, outside of the will of God, there is nothing I want. And in the will of God, there is nothing I fear. So this psalm, I hope it leads you to a sense of confidence in our God, who is our shepherd, and who is our host. Because this life is full of suffering and difficulties. It's been promised to us. But that is not the final word. Because our shepherd and our host is actually in the end leading us home. And He says, I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever.